Well, we continue in our look at the last bits of Romans. As we were mentioned last week, we're going to stick this out for the rest of the lectionary, only a couple more weeks, so if you just can't stand Romans, just hold on, it'll be fine. And as I was looking at this section, Romans 12, 9 to 21, can be justifiably described as a hodgepodge of things, of just statements as much as anything, that barely connect with each other at all, which is okay. And we'll explain why as we get there. And let's just cast our minds back to last week, and we think of the first couple of verses of Romans 12, where it's made pretty clear to us that we respond to God, that one of the ways we demonstrate the reality of our relationship with God and that God loves us and we love God is by serving God, but also by serving other people, by serving humanity as a whole. And so if we're wondering how to do that, and that's where the sermon title comes from, ever wonder what you should do, we then go to verses 9 to 21. And there's a bunch of things in there, and none of them are new. None of them are going to be a surprise to you. Even if you've never read this section of Romans, there's nothing here that you're going to think, well, where did that come from? Rather, it's going to be an opportunity for us to revisit some things, to pay attention to some things that we may have forgotten or things that we know and we just need to be reminded of. And I was realizing as I was looking at this, that I've got categories of interacting with the world, as we all do. And one of my categories is the reading of books. And when I read books and somebody repeats something, I tend to think, why are you telling me that again? Because when I read books, I read in a particular way, and I, generally speaking, get what's there the first time, if I'm going to get it at all. So telling me again just sort of gets in the way. And as I was realizing that was going on in the back of my mind, I thought, how many times have you told your children to do a particular thing? Clean up their room, put the dishes by the sink. Did you tell them once and that was enough? No, you told them a number of times. And did you tell them a number of times because your children are unusually unable to deal with the spoken word? Of course not. I have no idea how many times my parents told me things over and over again till I finally got them, assuming that I got all the things they wanted me to get. So revisiting things, and we've spoken about this often here, revisiting things that we've already gone through is never a bad thing. If nothing else, every year the lectionary has us talking about the Trinity, Transfiguration, these things that we know, we go back and we visit them over and over again because it's a good thing for us to do. Not that we're going to learn something new, but rather we're going to be reminded of what we already know. And we look at this list and we see things, well, it begins with love must be sincere. Hate what is evil, cling to what is good, be devoted to one another, honor one another, don't lack zeal, be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer, share with God's people who are in need, practice hospitality. Who can argue with any of those things? And who among us isn't someone who tries to do these things? So why does Paul mention them here, and why does he mention them again? Because these show up in lots of different places where Paul writes. Well, there's all kinds of reasons, and I don't know which one is yours. It's not out of the question that you may be in a situation now where you're wondering whether there's any point in being sincere in love, because the people that you are sincerely loving are looking at this from this weird perspective and asking you, what do you mean by that? And they seem to think, probably from some bad experiences in their past, that your expressions of love to them are some kind of a manipulative scheme. Well, if that happens once, it's one of those things, and you just think how unfortunate that that person has come to a place where they interpret generosity or love as something that might be, well, something that it isn't. If it happens to you just by chance in a series of events, you might begin to wonder if there's any point in being sincere in love at all. And we come to this passage, and Paul says, yes, there is. This is one of the things that we should do. Love must be sincere. Hate what is evil, cling to what is good. Well, we all do that. I don't know anybody who clings to what is evil and hates what's good. Some people cling to things that we don't think are good or maybe even think are evil. But if you ask them, they hardly ever say, well, yeah, this is this terrible destructive thing that I wish I didn't do, but I'm going to cling to it anyway. We come to these passages to be reminded that these are the things we should do, even perhaps when they're difficult. Often the things that we should do are difficult, or at least they're not easy. To continue to use my own life and my own family, I have many occasions, I've had many occasions to encourage my children to keep going at things. And one of the things that I come back to over and over again is a little statement that runs something along the lines of everything of value takes work to get good at. And yes, there's the occasional people who just seem to have been born able to draw or to sing or whatever it might be. But everything of value takes work to get good at and to get better at. And that includes the Christian life that we all want. It takes some work, and we need to be reminded of what we need to do, and this is what this list is all about. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. It gets a little harder at verse 14, which is what that was from. But then again, hardly any of us are really undergoing persecution. I'm not saying none of us are, but for the most part, we can believe what we wish and we can think what we wish and we may have disagreements with people, but we're unlikely to be persecuted. So what do we do with these kinds of passages? Well, we remind ourselves, first of all, of how blessed we are to not be persecuted. And we can use this as a spur to encourage us to pray for those who are, because there are people all around the world who are being persecuted. For what they believe, what they think, who they vote for, or if they want to vote at all, color of their skin, their gender. There are lots of these people who are undergoing this. The fact that we aren't doesn't mean we can't be aware of it. We need to bless people in the midst of that, and that's hard. It's hard to bless people who are persecuting you. It's hard to bless people you just don't like, let alone someone who's really persecuting you. But this is what we're called to do. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Mourn with those who mourn. This is another opportunity for us to be part of the lives of the people around us. For some of us, this is difficult. We have this feeling that we always need to pull people back to the middle. And so when someone's rejoicing about something, instead of just rejoicing with them, we remind them that, well, this won't last. You know, this too will pass and life will go back to the way it was. Well, that's just unkind. And Paul tells us, don't do it. And when people are mourning, trying to cheer them up by telling them jokes is hardly ever helpful. When someone is suffering a profound loss, you don't try and make them forget that it happened. You enter into that loss with them. I can't remember where I heard this first, but there's a great way of thinking of these things, and it goes something along the lines of joy shared is doubled or multiplied, and grief shared is halved. And it's true. It doesn't mean it goes away. When you share grief, it doesn't mean the grief evaporates, but it's not as hard. And when you're joyful with people, it just makes everything better. When you tell somebody something wonderful that's happened, and they are just as pleased about it as you are, doesn't that make you feel even better? And we do this because we're in community with people, we're in connection with people, and we want the good things of their life to be even better. And we want to be with them in the bad things of their lives, so they're not alone. We're called to live in harmony with one another. Don't be proud. Be willing to associate with anyone. Don't be conceited. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. That's a tough one, isn't it? We like the idea of revenge, not towards us because we don't do things that are wrong, but the people who do things that are wrong, we like the idea of them being punished for it. What Paul is telling us is that punishment for people isn't up to us. Go down to verse 19. Do not take revenge my friends, but leave room for God's wrath. For it is written, it is mine to avenge, I will repay, says the Lord. And then we're told, instead of seeking revenge, if our enemy is hungry, we are supposed to feed them. If they're thirsty, give them something to drink. Well, but we don't like to do that. It's easier for us to want revenge or to imagine revenge or to even try and execute revenge on people. And Paul says, no, we don't do that because that's not the kind of people we are. When we go back to our initial statement, if you will, at the beginning of chapter 12, we respond to the love of God within us by serving God and by loving and serving other people. Revenge doesn't fit there. If nothing else, we don't know enough. We don't know how to properly do this, so we shouldn't do it at all. And then when we get to the end of the chapter, we're reminded, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Now, we all know that we don't want to be overcome by evil. And we want to resist evil. And the difficulty is that, for the most part, our initial reaction of resistance is to fight back. When people are unkind to us, we want to be as unkind back to them, or maybe even more so. But that takes us back to this revenge business that we're not supposed to be doing. Instead, we're supposed to overcome evil with good, which isn't easy. You'll notice Paul doesn't say it's easy. He just says this is what we should do. Overcoming evil with good is one of those difficult things. It's difficult for just about all of us. Perhaps there are some people who are born with the ability to see past evil and continue to pour goodness upon people. But they're rare, if they exist at all, because I don't think I've ever met one. But instead, we're called to do what's right, to do what's good, even in the midst of evil. And this comes back to being hospitable. This comes back to feeding our enemies when they're hungry and giving them something to drink when they're thirsty. In doing this, you'll heap burning coals on their head. And this does not mean, as I thought it did when I was little, that when you did something good for somebody, they felt awful. That's not the point. If they feel some kind of shame because of what they have done, and it changes their behavior, that's terrific. But the goal is not that. The goal is to overcome evil with good by doing good and leaving the outcome to God. And that's where it gets tough. Because God, as a saint who I respect highly, has said more than once, God always acts too late. And of course, she wasn't serious. But isn't that the feeling we get sometimes? We are there busily doing our best to overcome evil with good, and evil is still there. We are consistently nice from the best of motives to this person who is not nice to us at all. And we think, well, where's the overcoming of evil? Well, we're not responsible for when that happens. And one of the things that I have found, the older I get, the more true it seems to be, is that my measuring system is always too short and too soon. I want God to fix things now, as soon as I pray. As soon as I even think about praying, I want them to be fixed. And that's not bad, but it's not the best way to approach your feeling of whether God's at work or not. We overcome evil with good by the doing of good, period. And we leave the results up to God. When we decide what evil overcome looks like, and refuse to believe that anything's happening until that occurs, we are then putting ourselves in the place of God, which we all know is wrong and pointless. And so instead, when we're wondering what we should do, that's one of the things that we should do. We should overcome evil with good, even when it doesn't feel like it's working, even when it doesn't look like it's working. Even when we've been hospitable to yet one more stranger and it hasn't seemed to do anything. Who knows where we fit in there? There's an image that I've come across off and on, and it's a picture in your mind, you know, just a cup or a glass, something like this, with water drops going into it. And eventually it overflows. Which drop is responsible for it overflowing? The last one that triggers the overflow? Well, that's pretty hard to make, because what about all the ones that went before? We want to be the drop that causes the overflow. We want to be the action that makes everything change, that overcomes the evil. But that's not what we're called to do. We're called to be part of that process. And sometimes we're one of the drops that doesn't seem to do anything. But everything we do, every time we work towards what is right, every time we resist evil by doing it with good, every time we don't repay evil for evil, every time we honor one another, every time we're joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer, every time we bless and do not curse those who persecute us or those we love, all of those things, are another drop. We're not responsible for the ultimate overcoming of evil. That's God, and God will do it in God's time. We are responsible for doing what we can do where we are now. Wondering what you should do? You can probably find something in this list. Whether it relates to people you know well, or your neighbors, your coworkers, the people you casually interact with in stores, restaurants, and places. Look through this list, and you will see things that you can do every day that are all part of overcoming evil with good, that are all part of making this world just that much more into what it was created to be. And the wonderful thing is that when we work out these actions, we're working out the relationship that we have with God through Jesus. We're availing ourselves of the Holy Spirit within us, and every time we do that, we become more and more the people we were created to be as we do those things that only we can do. Each of us has a unique and vital role to play in the circles and the contexts we're in that no one else can do. Are we going to do it perfectly? I have my doubts. Perfection is not a burden given to very many people. But we do what we can where we are. And when we do that, when we do those things that we know we should do, that's when we know that we're doing everything we're called to do. We're not called to fix the world. We're called to be partners with God in fixing ourselves. And through that, we can do our own part to make things better.